Honourable Chairman, my dear brethren and sisters, and boys and girls. Our children tonight are colouring in a picture which represents the people eagerly awaiting and welcoming the Lord as he returns to the city of Capernaum. And as they colour that in, I want to bear in mind the things that Uncle Keith has said, and we want to be like those people, ready and waiting when the Lord does return, an event which we believe is not very far off. Now we will remember that from our last class we considered the Lord's trip across the Sea of Galilee and the healing of the madman on the other side, which was so typical of the Lord's power, both to redeem individuals from the apostasy and ultimately to destroy the apostasy when he returns. We find that after healing the man, here in Luke chapter 8 and at verse 37, for instance, we read that then the whole multitude of the country of the Gadarenes round about besought him to depart from them, for they were taken with great fear, and he went up into the ship and returned back again. The Lord had travelled across the Sea of Galilee, as is represented here by the numbers 21 and 22. On his way across, he calmed the great storm. He arrived at Gerasa on the other side. He healed the madman. And then we read in verse 37 that the people around, or after healing the madman, of course he destroyed the great herd of swine that were on the hillside. And then we read there in verse 37 that the multitude of all that country round about besought him that he might depart from them. A notable miracle had been performed there, as they were all witnesses of, but the material costs were just a little bit too great, and therefore they asked the Lord to depart from them. And he departed without any argument. He just got into the ship again and returned back to the other side. Before he left, he however gave the healed man, as we read in verse 38 and verse 39, he gave him work to do. The man had wanted to accompany the Lord back across the sea, but Jesus did not permit that, but said unto him in verse 39, return to thine own house, and show how great things God hath done unto thee. And he went his way and published throughout the whole city how great things Jesus had done unto him. And so the Lord, although he would not allow him to accompany him, the Lord gave him work to do, work that we find that he performed faithfully. Because in Mark chapter 7, we find that the Lord came back to this region at a later time and found many people ready to receive him, being the fruits of that man's labours in publishing throughout all that region the great things that the Lord had done for him. And so now we read that in verse 40, that the Lord, having entered into the ship, passed over the sea again and came back to the city of Capernaum, of which our brother Tony has told us this evening. And we notice, as he pointed out to us, that Capernaum is on the northern end of the Sea of Galilee, just a little bit west of where the Jordan River flows into that sea. And we read in verse 40 very significantly that it came to pass that when Jesus was returned, the people gladly received him, for they were all waiting for him. And so, although we notice there that the word gladly in verse 40 is in italics, and that indicates that there's no corresponding Greek word, nevertheless, we do believe that the translators have accurately really portrayed the Greek there. Because the word gladly received is one Greek word which means to accept with joy, or in this case to welcome. The Lord had gone away, he comes back over the sea, and the people are there ready to welcome him or gladly receive him, because it says they were all waiting for him. And that word waiting for him really is a word which means watching for him or looking for him. We learn from Mark and from Matthew that there were great multitudes there. I think it's Mark, not Matthew. Matthew tells us that there were great, Mark tells us that there were great multitudes waiting for him when he returned. And in Mark chapter 5 and at verse 21 we read, "And when Jesus was passed over again by ship unto the other side, much people gathered unto him, and he was nigh unto the sea." Now Mark makes a very significant little comment there. He points out that there were much people, there were multitudes there, and that the Lord was by the sea. So he'd no sooner got out of the boat than he was surrounded by crowds of people. In actual fact, here in Luke, the word people in verse 40 there, "the people gladly received him," is a word which means a crowd or a multitude. So both Mark and Luke agree on that point, that there were crowds of people there ready to welcome him, for they were out there looking for him. You see, the evening before the Lord had departed from them, the disciples had put him in the boat in a state of almost exhaustion, and they'd set out for that journey across the lake. They hadn't gone very far, and a terrible storm sprung up upon that lake. Mark tells us that when they left, there were many other little ships following them. We read no more of those little ships. Maybe they were turned back by the storm. Perhaps some of them perished in the storm, we don't know. But you see, the people knew that the Lord had gone out in a ship onto that sea, and they would have known of the terrible storm that smote that lake. And we see that there were many people in that city of Capernaum that were quite anxious over the well-being of the Lord. Perhaps they had heard of the great miraculous calm as well, and were there gathered at the seaside to see what had happened. And they were all looking anxiously for the boat that the Lord had set out to sea upon, and they were waiting for him. You see, and as our brother Tony pointed out to us, the Lord had spent much time in Capernaum. He'd performed many miracles in Capernaum. And although the religious leaders were opposed to him and were seeking to destroy him, nevertheless there were many people in that city who had been greatly impressed by the things that the Lord had done and the words they heard come from his lips. And now when the Lord had disappeared out onto the sea and this great storm had burst upon the sea, then there was that tremendous calm. It had gathered many people down to the seaside that they might be looking for him. And when they saw his boat coming, they gladly received him and they welcomed him back. And of course, perhaps we can see a little type in this. As the Lord was laid in a state of weakness in that boat, as he fell asleep in that boat, and as the great storm broke out and he calmed the storm, and now he returns back to Capernaum, and the people are there ready to welcome him and receive him. And you know, when the Lord Jesus Christ does return back, the nation of Israel will say, "Blessed is he who cometh in the name of the Lord," and will be ready to welcome him and receive him at that time. Now we find that among the crowds that had gathered there were certain people to which the scriptural record now directs our attention. When we go to Matthew chapter 9 and at verses 14 to 17, we find that among those crowds were some of the disciples of John, that is, of John the Baptist. Now it becomes apparent that these were among the crowds when we get to verse 18. Because there, verse 18 states that while he spake these things unto them, behold, there came a certain ruler and worshipped him, saying, "My daughter is even now dead, but come and lay thy hand upon her, and she shall live." Now we know from the other gospel records that this refers to Jairus, who came and sought the Lord to heal his daughter. And we learn from the other gospel records that he came and sought the Lord just after his arrival back at Capernaum from that journey over the sea. So that shows us that verses 14 to 17 of Matthew chapter 9 actually took place at the arrival of the Lord back in the city of Capernaum. We have already looked at the answer that the Lord gave to the question of John, because he was asked that question previously by the Pharisees and also some disciples of John at the feast that Matthew put on at the time of his acceptance of the Lord Jesus Christ. But this is another occasion again where disciples of John come to him and ask him again, why do we and the Pharisees fast off, but thy disciples fast not? See, John the Baptist had been in prison for some period of time now, and these disciples of John, still loyal to John, were finding certain things difficult to understand. Why, for instance, hadn't the Lord Jesus Christ gone and delivered John from prison? Why was it that the Lord's ways seemed different in many ways to the ways of their master, John the Baptist? And of course, one of the features of John and his disciples were that they fasted oft, but the disciples of the Lord fasted not. Now the Lord spoke three short parables to them to answer their questions. In verse 15, he used the parable of the children of the bride chamber. He says, can the children of the bride chamber mourn as long as the bridegroom is with them? But the days will come when the bridegroom shall be taken from them, and then shall they fast. In this he took up a parable that John himself had spoken. In John chapter 3 and verse 29, John the Baptist spoke to his own disciples concerning the Lord Jesus Christ, pointing out that the Lord was the bridegroom and John himself was the friend of the bridegroom, or what we would call the best man. In John 3 and verse 29 we read those words. He says, he that hath the bride is the bridegroom, but the friend of the bridegroom which standeth and heareth him rejoiceth greatly because of the bridegroom's voice. This my joy therefore is full. There John the Baptist is pointing out that the Lord Jesus Christ was the bridegroom. And you see, here the Lord takes this up in his answer to the disciples of John. He says, can the children of the bride chamber, well, that is the guests at the wedding, can they mourn as long as the bridegroom is with them? Of course they don't. That's a time of rejoicing and happiness. But as the Lord pointed out, the days will come when the bridegroom shall be taken from them. And then will they mourn and fast. And so he was showing the disciples of John that his very presence there put mourning on the part of his disciples out of the question. But the day was coming when he would be taken away, and then they would mourn. Then in verse 16, he speaks of the mending of an old garment with a patch. He says, no man putteth a piece of new cloth unto an old garment, for that which is put in to fill it up taketh from the garment, and the rent is made worse. He said, you don't get a piece of new cloth that's not yet shrunk and put it on an old garment, because as soon as that garment's put in the wash, that new patch will shrink and it will tear away all the sides and make the rent in that garment worse. But you see, the lesson that the Lord is trying to impress upon the disciples of John is that he had not come just to patch up Judaism. He had come to establish a new way of life. Not really new, of course, because it had been there right from the very beginning. But new as far as Judaism was concerned. And he said, you can't put a new piece of cloth on an old garment. And so you see, he and his disciples, didn't carry on the fast that the Pharisees kept and that John kept. because he'd come to establish a new way of life. And then in verse 17, he spoke the parable of the new wine in old bottles. He said, "Neither do men put new wine into old bottles, else the bottles break, and the wine runneth out, and the bottles perish. But they put new wine into new bottles, and both are preserved." You see, and the Lord had come to establish, to generate new life within people. But he needed new bottles. He wasn't pouring that new doctrine into the old ways of Judaism, just trying to patch that up. It was a new life he'd come to establish, and he was putting that new life into new bottles. Now in that way, the Lord answered the disciples of John, as he had done on a previous occasion, showing him why it was that his disciples did not fast. Now I believe we in verse 18 we read, "While he spake these things unto them, behold, there came a certain ruler and worshipped him." So that Matthew points out that while the Lord was speaking to the disciples of John in this way, he was in the actual act of answering their question when along came a certain ruler and made a request. And I believe that verse 18 there shows us that there is a connection with the miracles that follow and the principles that the Lord has been teaching to the disciples of John. It draws that connection because he's giving that answer. You can't put new wine into old bottles. You don't put a patch of new cloth on an old garment. He's just explaining those things to them. And along comes a certain ruler, worshipping him and saying, "My daughter is even now dead." And I believe there is a connection between the miracles that follow and the principles that the Lord Jesus Christ was setting before the disciples of John. Because we find that now from verse 18 down to verse 34, in the Gospel of Matthew, we have recorded a sequence of miracles. We have the cleansing of a woman who had an issue of blood. We have the raising of Jairus' daughter. We go down through the chapter. In verse 27, we find that Jesus restores two blind men to sight. And finally, coming down to verse 32, we see that then he heals a dumb man possessed with a devil. Now I believe that in the sequence of these miracles as set forth here by Matthew, there is a typical foreshadowing of the work of the Lord Jesus Christ. And perhaps if we just have a look at the overall teaching of those things first, we might be better able to then come back and look at the details. There on the transparency, we have briefly set out what we believe is the overall typical teaching of these events. You see, in verse 18 of Matthew, we read of Jairus, not that he's named in Matthew, but he is in the other Gospels, we read of Jairus appealing to Christ for his daughter who is at the point of death. We believe that daughter at the point of death is typical of the nation of Israel, who was at the point of both spiritual and political death. And while the Lord responds to that appeal and sets about to go and heal Jairus' daughter, we find that he is delayed along the way. He's delayed along the way because he has to cleanse a woman with a running issue. You see, we believe that woman also typifies the nation of Israel, as we shall see when we look at it in more detail. She typifies the nation of Israel as well. But you see, before Israel could be restored to political life, they had to be cleansed from their uncleanness. And so cleansing from sin must precede resurrection to life. And so although he's delayed along the way, he's laying the basis for the cleansing of that woman with the issue of blood. And while he's delayed, Jairus, his daughter, actually dies. You see, and while the Lord is in the process of cleansing Israel, the Jewish nation fell into political death. But you see, the Lord then completed his work and he raised Jairus' daughter to life again, foreshadowing Israel's political and spiritual resurrection, which is yet future, of course. After raising Jairus' daughter, he restores two blind men to sight, restores sight to two blind men. And of course, after the political resurrection of Israel at the return of the Lord Jesus Christ, enlightenment will be given to both Jew and Gentile. And you see, after he healed those two blind men, a dumb man possessed of a devil was brought to him, and he healed him and gave him the power of speech. And of course, in the millennium, when those previous things have been accomplished, mankind will be given a sound mind and a pure lip whereby they might praise Yahweh. And so I believe in the sequence of miracles here in Matthew chapter 9, we do have that foreshadowing of the work of the Lord Jesus Christ. You see, he came that he might save Israel. But you see, that work has been delayed because, first of all, he had to lay the basis for cleansing them from their uncleanness. But he will yet return. He will raise that nation to life, political and spiritual life, once again. He will bring enlightenment to both Jew and Gentile, and all mankind in the kingdom age will be given a sound mind and a pure lip with which they might praise Yahweh. And we believe that is the overall typical teaching of these events that we have recorded here in Matthew, in Mark, and in Luke. Now it is Matthew, I think, that gives us the full information of those miracles. And so then, with that overall picture in mind, let us come back and take a more detailed look at the narrative. In Matthew 9 and verse 18, recorded also in Mark and in Luke, we read that while he spake these things unto them, behold, there came a certain ruler and worshipped him, saying, My daughter is even now dead, but come and lay thy hand upon her, and she shall live. Now when we go to the Gospel of Mark, in chapter 5, and at verse 22, Mark 5 and verse 22, we read, And behold, there cometh one of the rulers of the synagogue, Jairus by name. And when he saw him, he fell at his feet. So whereas Matthew just says he was a certain ruler, Mark tells us that he was one of the rulers of the synagogue. Luke also tells us that he was a ruler of the synagogue. It seems that sometimes there was more than one ruler of the synagogue. We learn from Mark and from Luke that Jairus was a ruler of the synagogue. Now, although this is the first time we have direct mention of this man, he would have been present on many other significant events that had taken place. As our brother Tony pointed out, the synagogue at Capernaum was a place where the Lord had gone on several occasions. And many notable things had happened in that synagogue at Capernaum. And so Jairus, as a ruler of that synagogue, would have been present probably on all of those occasions, at least on some of them. Now, as a ruler of the synagogue, one of his duties as a ruler of the synagogue was to make sure that nobody that was ceremonially unclean would go into that synagogue and thus defile the other worshippers there. And you see, that means that for 12 years, Jairus had been shutting a certain woman out of that synagogue. He'd been shutting her out from the place of true worship. There was a woman in Capernaum that for 12 years hadn't been able to go into that synagogue. She hadn't been able to go to the temple. She was shut out from all aspects of worship in Israel. And Jairus would have been one who was foremost in seeing that she did not enter in, that she might defile that place and the other people there. But you see, the Lord was going to work with Jairus. The Lord had a purpose, I believe, with Jairus. And I believe that as we look at these chapters, indeed, the cleansing of that woman was a very mighty work. The raising of Jairus' daughter to life again was a notable miracle. But perhaps one of the greatest things of all that happens in these chapters is what Yahweh does with Jairus. You see, as we noted, Jairus, although we read of him here, we read direct reference to him here for the first time, there are incidents that Jairus would have been well familiar with. For instance, we go to Mark chapter 1. And in Mark chapter 1, we read of certain things that happened in the synagogue. Mark chapter 1, verses 21 to 27, we won't read them all. But in verse 21, we read, "And they went into Capernaum, and straightway on the Sabbath day he entered into the synagogue and taught. And they were astonished at his doctrine, for he taught them as one that had authority and not as the scribes." And then we read of the way in which he healed a man with an unclean spirit in the synagogue there. And verse 27 says, "And they were all amazed, insomuch that they questioned among themselves, saying, What thing is this? What new doctrine is this? For with authority commandeth he even the unclean spirits, and they obey him." That happened in the synagogue at Capernaum, where Jairus was one of the rulers of the synagogue. Mark chapter 3, verses 1 to 6, is another event that took place in that synagogue. Mark chapter 3, verse 1, "And he entered again into the synagogue, and there was a man there which had a withered hand." You see, and it's in this occasion in the synagogue at Capernaum that the Lord's conflict with the Pharisees over the Sabbath came to its climax. And it was there in the synagogue at Capernaum that the Lord greatly humiliated the Pharisees before all the people. And the Pharisees determined that they might take counsel with the Herodians that they might destroy him. And there was a great argument and conflict that took place in that synagogue on that morning between the Lord and the Pharisees. And finally in verse 5 we read, "And when he had looked around about on them with anger, being grieved for the hardness of their hearts, he said unto the man, Stretch forth thine hand. And he stretched it out, and his hand was restored whole as the other. And the Pharisees went forth and straightway took counsel with the Herodians against him, how they might destroy him." In all probability, Jairus was not with the Pharisees that took counsel with the Herodians. But we don't read of him standing up and defending the Lord Jesus Christ. We don't read of him after these occasions appealing to the Lord to help that woman that had been shut out of the synagogue for 12 years. But you see, Jairus was undoubtedly impressed by the things that he saw and heard, although he wasn't prepared, perhaps, at this stage to clearly identify himself with the Lord Jesus Christ. But you see, Yahweh was going to work with that man, and Yahweh was going to change that man's life. You know, we learn from Mark and from Luke, Mark chapter 5, we learn that his name, the ruler's name, was Jairus. It's there that verse 22 tells us that he was one of the rulers of the synagogue, Jairus by name. Now Jairus is a name which means whom God enlightens. And Yahweh was about to open that man's eyes. And he was going to see things that he had never seen before. Because you see, the time came when Yahweh touched that man. He touched him in a place that affected him very, very deeply personally. We read in the Gospel of Matthew, for instance, that Jairus came to the Lord and worshipped him because his daughter was at home, well, as it says in Matthew, even now dead. We learn from Mark and from Luke that she was on the point of death at the time when the Lord first came to him. In Matthew it just records, "My daughter is even now dead." When we go to Mark chapter 5 and verse 23, we read that Jairus came to the Lord and he fell at his feet and besought him greatly, saying, "My little daughter lieth at the point of death." And that phrase, "little daughter," is a term of great endearment. It indicates that that little girl was one who was very precious to Jairus, one who was very dear to him, and she was at the point of death. From Luke chapter 8 and at verse 42, we read, "For he had one only daughter, about 12 years of age, and she lay a dying." And you see, Yahweh touched that man where it affected him very deeply. And that man was brought to a point of desperation when that little girl who was dear and precious to him was on the point of being taken from him. And where could Jairus look? Could the synagogue help him? Could the law do anything for him? It couldn't. As you see, Jairus remembered those occasions in the synagogue. And he knew that there was a man who could help, because he'd seen that power demonstrated before his very eyes. And so Jairus sought that man out. And Jairus is down there with the crowd on the seashore, waiting for that time when the Lord would return, that he might seek him out and beseech him that he might come to his house, that he might heal that his daughter that was on the point of death. And so we find that when he finds the Lord, he falls at his feet, as Luke says, or he worships him, as Matthew says. He was a man now who was greatly humbled at the feet of the Lord Jesus Christ, because he knew that that was the only place he could come for help. Now in verse 42 of Luke chapter 8, we're told that this little girl was about 12 years of age. She wasn't a very small child. In fact, in Jewish terms, she was on the point of entering into womanhood. But she was about 12 years of age. And the number 12, of course, as soon as we think of the number 12, our mind goes straight to the 12 tribes of Israel. And I believe that the number 12 here is intended to take our mind to the 12 tribes of Israel. Because that little girl, the daughter of Jairus, I believe represents the nation of Israel, which was at the point of spiritual and political death at that particular time. And you see, Jairus, as one of the rulers of the synagogue, was one who was responsible for that nation, responsible for the well-being of that nation. In fact, the ruler of a synagogue was looked upon as a shepherd. See, he was looked upon as one who was to be a father to the people over whom he was put in charge. And so his little daughter represents Israel, which was on the point of death. And so he comes and he beseeches the Lord Jesus Christ that he'll come and heal his daughter. And the Lord proceeds to go. But there's still lessons that Jairus has got to learn. And there's lessons that he's going to be taught.
He's humbled himself at the feet of the Lord Jesus Christ. He's greatly besought him that he'll come and help him. And the Lord's on his way. He's on his way to help him. And in Luke 8:48 and verse 42, we read, "But as he went, the people thronged him." We find that Mark also brings this point to our attention in Mark chapter 5 and verse 24. "And Jesus went with him, and much people followed him and thronged him." Actually, Mark and Luke both use two different words to describe this, the crowd thronging him. Luke perhaps uses the stronger word. The word that Luke uses, translated thronged there, is a word which means to choke, to throttle, or to suffocate. And it indicates the way the crowd was pressing heavily around him. And obviously, a crowd pressing around like that would greatly slow down the progress to the house of Jairus. Mark uses a different word, but the word that Mark uses means to press together, or to press closely on all sides. So although they use two different words, they both emphasise the way the crowd was pressing around the Lord, and how the progress to the house of Jairus would be greatly slowed down and greatly impeded as the people pressed out around him that their own personal needs might be met. And so you see, it was the progress of the Lord in raising Jairus' daughter to life was slowed down because of the needs of the people that were pressing closely around him. But you see, as they go on their way toward the house, a further delay takes place. Because we read in verse 43 of Luke chapter 8, "And a woman having an issue of blood 12 years, which had spent all her living upon physicians, neither could be healed by any, came behind him and touched the border of his garment, and immediately her issue of blood stanched." And then we find that the Lord stops and turns round and questions as to who had touched him. But you see, we find that this particular woman is described both in Matthew, Mark and Luke as a woman having an issue of blood 12 years. And under the law, this rendered her unclean. In the 15th chapter of the book of Leviticus, we read that a woman in such a condition as this was unclean. She was to be outside the camp like a leper, and everything she touched was to be would be defiled. Leviticus 15 and verse 19. "And if a woman have an issue, and her issue in her flesh be blood, she shall be put apart 7 days, and whosoever touches her shall be unclean until the even, and everything that she lieth upon in her separation shall be unclean. Everything also that she sitteth upon shall be unclean," and so on and so forth. Verse 25, "And if a woman have an issue of her blood many days out of the time of her separation, or if it run beyond the time of her separation, all the days of the issue of her uncleanness shall be as the days of her separation, she shall be unclean." She was to be put out the camp. Everything she touched would be defiled. Every person that came in contact with her would be defiled. And this woman had been in that condition for 12 years. You see, for 12 years, the rulers of that synagogue had to put her into that position, shut her out of the synagogue, treat her as unclean and defiled. What could they do for her? The law could do nothing. That's all the law could do, shut her out of the camp and labour her as unclean. What could Jairus do? What could the rulers of the synagogue do? That's all they could do. They were powerless to do anything else. And that woman, we read from the gospel records, as we'll look in a moment, had spent all her living. She tried everything she possibly could to be healed of that infirmity. without success. You see, that woman in that condition typifies the nation of Israel. Now, in the 36th chapter of the prophecy of Ezekiel, we read in verse 17, verse 17 of Ezekiel 36, Son of man, when the house of Israel dwelt in their own land, they defiled it by their own way and by their doings. Their way was before me of the uncleanness of a removed woman. And here's this woman with the issue of blood, in the very state that the nation of Israel morally were in. You see, the law labelled her as unclean to teach the lesson that which issues forth from the flesh is sin. It's unclean. The Lord said in Matthew 15, that which cometh out of the heart of man that defileth a man. And you see, that woman in that condition was treated in that way by the law to teach that lesson, that which issues forth from the flesh is unclean. And because Israel had walked in the ways of the flesh, they were morally defiled and unclean. And that woman types the nation of Israel. She spent all her living on many positions, we're told by Mark and Luke. And she suffered many things, but all in vain. So it is with the nation of Israel. Look, the nation of Israel turned everywhere but to Yahweh, that they might be cleansed, that they might be given life. But you see, as Jeremiah chapter 30 and verse 17 points out, it is only Yahweh that can heal the sickness of the nation of Israel. But you see, this woman has been shut out for 12 years. This woman was a woman that learned that the Lord Jesus Christ was one who could help her. You know, when we go to the 9th chapter of the book of Matthew, I believe a tremendous lesson must have hit home to Jairus as the Lord deals with this woman. We find that the woman comes. She touches the hem of Christ's garment, and immediately she is healed. You know, the hem of the garment would have been the fringe of his garment. And according to Numbers 15, verses 37 to 40, the Jew was to have a border of blue around his garment. And that border of blue was to speak of the principle of God manifestation. The blue reminding the colour of the heavens, reminding of heavenliness and of godliness. It reminded the Jew of his responsibility for God manifestation. The woman sought to touch the hem of his garment because she recognised that he was God manifest in the flesh. Now, in Mark chapter 5, we'll come back to Matthew 9 in a moment, so just keep the finger in it. In Mark chapter 5, and at verse 28, and also in it is also in Matthew 9:21. We could have looked at Matthew 9:21, but we're here at Mark chapter 5 and verse 28. We read that as she pressed through the crowd, and she would have had to struggle through the crowd that she might just touch the hem of his garment, it says, "For she said, if I may touch but his clothes, I shall be whole." And the tense there is in the imperfect tense, which indicates that she kept on saying it in her mind. As she fought her way through that crowd, she was constantly saying in her mind, if I must but touch his clothes, I shall be whole. And she struggled through that crowd, and she touched the hem of his garment, and immediately she was healed. You see, the Lord Jesus Christ then turned round and said, "Who touched me?" And of course, the woman, the shrunk, tried to hide in the crowd. She didn't want to come forward. We can understand that a woman sitting with such an infirmity as that would be very reluctant to make it public, because after all, she would have defiled all that were in that crowd. Her very touch of the Lord Jesus Christ would have defiled him. But you see, she knew that as soon as he touched him, she'd been healed. But you see, the Lord looked around, and the disciples even questioned him. He says, what with all these people pressing around you? And you ask, who touched you? But the Lord insisted. He said, I know that power has gone forth out of me. And his eyes went around that crowd and sought out that woman. And we read in verse 22 of Matthew, but Jesus turned about him when he saw her. You see, he sought her out. He brought her forward that she might confess with her lips that which was done. He said, although the woman was smitten with a very humiliating and embarrassing type of infirmity, nevertheless she had to come forward. She had to make public declaration of what she had done. And so it will be with every one of us. You see, we're all in the position of that woman, unclean, because of that which issues forth from our flesh. But we won't be cleansed until we make public confession before the Lord Jesus Christ of the condition that we are in. But you see, in verse 22 we read, and Jesus turned about him, when he saw her, said, daughter. And I believe that's the only, this instance is the only place where the Lord Jesus Christ addressed a woman as daughter. Why did he do it here? To teach Jairus a lesson. See, Jairus had been greatly concerned over his daughter who was smitten sick. But here was a woman who was a daughter of Abraham. Here was a woman who was a daughter of Zion. He said, what had he done for her? What could the law do for her? The law could do nothing. As the Lord said to her, be of good comfort. Thy faith hath made thee whole. And the woman was made whole from that hour. You see, there is shown in the experiences of that woman the basis upon which Israel will in the future be cleansed from her uncleanness, upon the principle of faith. That woman had to turn her back on the synagogue. The law could do nothing for her, but faith in the Son of God healed her. And Israel will yet to learn that lesson. And of course, through all this process, Jairus has been taught the lesson that it is only by faith that his little daughter could be restored to life again. They had to turn their back on the law, on Judaism, on the synagogue, and turn in faith to the Lord Jesus Christ, the one who was God manifest in the flesh. And we likewise, brethren and sisters, have got to learn that lesson. There's nowhere else we can look. There's nothing else to which we can turn but manifest faith in the Lord Jesus Christ if we are to be cleansed from our uncleanness and raised to life again in the future.